Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the podcast, the YouTube channel, or on LinkedIn and anywhere you're finding us. I'm really excited to introduce to you one of my mentors, Mike Wong, who so we met at LinkedIn when he was senior director of the LinkedIn Marketing Solutions department within LinkedIn. And we stayed in touch, and recently he's made a move to become the senior vice president of sales at Digital Turbine. And today we're going to be discussing around career moves. And I'm sure, Mike, a lot of people have asked you, why would you ever leave LinkedIn? LinkedIn's such a great company, right? So we'll discuss when it would make sense to make an intelligent strategic move. And I'm excited to have you here, Mike. Welcome.
Awesome. And always great to reconnect with you, Davidson. And I know this perhaps isn't the main topic of our conversation, but congrats to you for what seems to be a really exciting move you're about to make in your career. And so happy to touch on the conversations that you and I had before you embarked on that decision, which I think is relevant to the topics at hand.
Thank you. My conversation with you was great. We were just talking about how to prepare for an interview, how to present yourself in the best light. And I think one of the things you do really well, amongst a lot of things, but it's just like the quality of relationships that you have and surrounding yourself with leaders and people, and how you're able to groom talent as well. So yes, we have a lot to talk about today. Excited to get right into it.
Fantastic.
So, you've been with LinkedIn for a while. Clearly, you've left a really strong legacy. And I know that, Digital Turbine obviously is not as big as LinkedIn, right? What made you what about that opportunity piqued your interest?
Great question. And I want to be very clear with our listeners that, LinkedIn's a place that was and remains really, really kind of special to me, a special place in my heart and in my head for that matter. And it's a place I could have stayed forever. And so it was easily the most difficult decision I've ever made professionally to leave. And I'm still very close to folks there from leadership to even ICs that have only been there for a year or less. So really a remarkable place. And I think when I think about what I have done and what I'm trying to do at Digital Turbine in terms of kind of changing the culture, changing the operating rhythm of part of the ad business, just about everything I'm trying to do, I learned at LinkedIn from some of the great leaders and great peers there. So I think for me, it came down to a couple things. Number one was when I thought about kind of my learning path, there were still some things to learn within marketing solutions, but not that many, certainly in the short term. And so when I thought about kind of my next, 18 to 24 months in that seat, it perhaps didn't seem as kind of radically different as it had been in the almost 6 years prior that I had sat in that seat of, great privilege being in that role. So I was really looking for something perhaps bigger with a greater remit, with perhaps maybe kind of a bigger platform. My current responsibilities at Digital Turbine are global. So I've had the opportunity to manage leaders in Asia Pacific, in the Europe and Middle East, and learn all about their cultures, learn all about their sales motions, learn all about the ways that they motivate sellers, the way that they delight clients, which are different, believe it or not, than perhaps us arrogant kind of North Americans are led to believe. And so that's been really fun, right? To almost kind of export what I've learned and what I'm learning outward into the world. So that's really been fun. I also think that Digital Turbine is one of those companies that's really on kind of that kind of innovation edge in terms of what it's trying to be, which is a monetization platform for mobile apps. And I think that that was really exciting to kind of take a step in the direction of something a little bit more kind of perhaps rigorous from an ad tech standpoint, thinking through different service levels, programmatic being one in the media world right now, kind of managed service being another, and thinking through kind of the differences between building out teams to service clients in those different formats. Really, really interesting work, and been a lot of it. And there's been a lot of sleepless nights. There's been a lot of migraines and so a lot of, decisions that I've been granted by the really exceptional executive leadership team in DT to make on behalf of the ad business. One of those things where don't often know whether my decisions are right or not. And that's a little scary, but that's a good thing, right? I actually think that career progression often is about kind of getting in that position where you are a little scared and you are a little uncertain. I think those influences often make us better, and certainly, regardless of outcome, those experiences definitely make us better.
I love that. Yeah, it sounds like you're able to flex, not only understand more globalization and the different regions and the different selling stuff. And, every market has its own challenges, right? So the little nuances that each of these regions have, but you're also able to flex those like decision-making skills and you're able to see the impact of that, right? So that's huge. And I'm sure those skills are valuable forever, right? That's always going to be part of your repertoire. Like those, building those muscles sounds like it'll be useful.
Well, I've always tried to be customer driven, and I know that sounds a little cliche, but what I mean by that is, I've always tried to be an active listener with partners. I've always tried to understand at a very specific level what value meant to them from a platform, from a publisher. And the truth turns out to be that answer can be very different, even if it's the same brand in a different part of the world. And so that's been fascinating to me here. So, example, a brand, a big auto brand or big CPG brand, may buy on a very specific KPI or measure of success in the States, and they buy it completely differently in Malaysia, right, or in the United Kingdom, right? So I think it's a classic case, to your point, of a truly global ad economy, and how on your game you have to be as a sales professional, as a sales leader, depending on where you are in the world. And that has just been an incredible experience for me.
Interesting. So you're seeing every year we become more and more more globalized as an economy, right? And it seems like with the technology, and I'm sure the pandemic has actually accelerated sort of that globalization, right? As we become more used to a different way of doing business.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, and again, there have been essays and white papers published on this topic about what, to your point, the pandemic has done in terms of the way people work, the way people collaborate, and of course, the raging debate between kind of hybrid versus remote versus on location. And, I don't have any of those answers. I think that there are so many different ways to be successful and be productive, but I think it has been really meaningful for me to make a trip to Asia, a couple of trips to Europe. The Middle East is on my radar for early calendar 2023, and to talk to clients and to truly understand their pain points, truly understand how a platform, and in my case, mobile advertising, can deliver value, can grow, can earn more investment, can be a trusted advisor. All those things are really important. And I think they're important at a local level. So it's a little bit of a paradox, right? Because the economy is becoming more global, but I think the issues and the specific ways to resolve those issues have never been more local, if that makes sense.
Interesting. So it sounds like your active listening skills and just the quality of relationships that you build with your clients, it sounds like similarly, like your teams, as you're building out teams, as you're interviewing and as you're, finding reliable people to produce, it's been that's interesting. Do you see like a common difference between, like taking care of your clients and then ultimately like helping your team sell better in terms of, solving some of those pain points?
Yeah, I mean, I think I look for those traits when I recruit. I look for those traits when I interview. And I often ask people, candidates for various roles, whether they're individual contributor roles or leadership roles, like, you know, what makes you a great teammate? You know, give me a couple of examples of something you've done that have kind of had a halo effect for the entire team or the entire organization. And, you know, I sometimes, and then I'll ask a question, which I know often pops up on LinkedIn and other job sites, which is, tell us about your biggest setback, what you learned from it. And one of the great answers, types of answers I always hear was, here was something that was a setback for me, but it's something that I kind of paid forward to others so they would avoid that mistake, or that they would be better, or they'd show up in a different way when they had that opportunity. And I think there's so many of those examples in sales, whether you're selling SaaS or whether you're selling services or you're selling media, it doesn't matter kind of what you're selling. All these examples of like, here's something I did. I wish I'd done it better. I may not have an opportunity to make that up, but what I can do is turn to the person to my left or right and make sure that he or she does it better, more strategically. So I actually look for those things. It's a great call out on your part. I try to identify those traits early in candidates, especially when they're trying to do something really hard. And most of these sales jobs that we're all chasing after and people pursue are really hard.
And it sounds like you're interviewing like a lot of people as you're building out these teams, right? What have you identified as some of the top key characteristics that have set apart, you know, people who are consistently reliable and, you know, versus folks that are, you know, I guess they call them run rate reps, right?
You know, and I know that we're in a very difficult time, and I want to express that to all folks that are listening to us today. There have been, you know, layoffs at some of the iconic companies out of Silicon Valley. And in talking to some of those folks who have been let go almost without rhyme or reason, you know, top performers, they've been there a long time, almost no way to kind of understand the calculus behind why those decisions are made, but they were made. But we are, Digital Turbine specifically, you know, we're still in growth mode. We're still hiring. I've actually posted on LinkedIn our job board, active searches for really, really incredible roles in all regions. So that's just kind of a PSA there. But to answer your question, one of the things that I really admire is people, especially in sales roles, who show up for interviews almost like they're making a pitch, right? And so, you know, you show up for an interview, certainly for a job that you really wanted, a company that you really wanted to work for, just like you'd show up for the biggest deal in your pipeline, right? You have to have that mindset. And you have to think, just like when you're pitching a product like you've done successfully, like, well, who else is going to be pitching after me? Who else pitched before me? What are the things that I need to think about? What are the questions I need to ask? And I feel like it's a direct comparison to most of these interviews, certainly kind of quota carrying sales roles and sales leadership roles, where you have to have that mindset of like, hey, I'm going to win this, just like I'm going to win that singular deal. And I found that the candidates that show up with that mindset, whether it's said or unsaid, have performed the best. And there's all sorts of tricks of the trade, if you will. And these are not, I don't claim to be, you know, kind of revolutionary here in saying these things, but certainly if you're interviewing with public companies, you know, getting your hands on as many earning transcripts, as many analyst reports as you can. If you're interviewing with a private company, obviously harder information to get, there are fewer sources, that kind of stuff, but being scrappy, asking friends of friends or friends of friends of friends, experience working for these companies. And so getting a good sense of the competitive landscape is really important. You know, one of the great questions that I often get when I turn it over to the candidate to ask me anything on their mind is, when you lose a deal or when your business contracts with a client, why are you losing? Right. To me, a very strategic question, kind of a classic kind of challenger question. That's number one. Number two is great question I get is often like, who else in your space is doing this really well? And it's so interesting because I think you're almost trained to think like, when you're interviewing a company, you want to make them feel like they're the big enchilada. They're the only game in town. But the, you know, the reality is in technology, that's very rarely the case, right? And so a really thoughtful question about that, like, hey, who else is doing this really well? Who else do you kind of gaze upon with admiration for whatever reason and why? I love that question. You know, another question that I got, and I think you and I discussed this a couple of weeks ago when you were embarking on your search, the final phase of your search, is kind of like, if you think about the person that was doing this before me, what were their gaps? What were the things that they did well? What were the things they did do well? Like, where's the continuity and where's the change kind of in terms of this role? And so I really like questions like that. But there are any number of really good questions. I think what's not really good is having no questions. And I've had the experience, you know, throughout my career as somebody who has hired people, but even recently of kind of like, you know, you leave that 15-minute block at the end for questions and the candidate doesn't have any. Like and there's almost no question that I won't answer as long as it's not proprietary information or if it's something kind of a completely off kilter. You know, if it's germane to the business strategy, the success of the company, the publicly stated future vision of the company, the culture of the company, all these things to me are fair game. And if the candidate doesn't ask me those things, I think that either she or he is not that interested in it, or they haven't really thought about what they want and where they're going to be successful.
Yeah, I'm hearing a common theme of just thoughtfulness, right? Like, Mike, you're clearly very thoughtful in your approach and your relationships, and just you're a thoughtful guy, right? I think if a candidate lacks an initiative or even the curiosity, like, clearly you have a lot of knowledge, right? Especially in your role, but anyone, right? It's just like, hey, like, how come you're not curious enough to ask, you know, like, at least spend 15 minutes to think of questions, right?
I think about interviews in many ways as kind of an unfair situation in which a candidate many times is really, really anxious to work for that company, land that gig, is given 45 minutes, at most maybe an hour, to tell you why you should hire them. And so to me, it's unfair. So you kind of start with this premise that it's not a great way to make really, really important hires that can impact your business and people's lives for that matter, you know, but it is what it is. That's the world we live in. And so I think, I think it's really up to the candidate to make the most of those experiences. And I think you were segueing into a couple of other tips that, that I can share, especially in a time like this, when people are looking. And one of the things that I think are really valuable are pre-reads. And you send ahead of time, and knowing that a couple of things, knowing that the interviewer may be too busy to read it, knowing that you may not be able to open that deck or that Word document during the interview, but just to have that ready. And some of the best candidates I've had through my experience building out the Digital Turbine team, you know, doing recruiting at LinkedIn, people took the liberty of creating, you know, 5-6 slide decks. You know, here's my story. And then as we opened the interview, they would say, I don't know if we're going to have the time. You know, I want to make sure you have all your questions answered. But if there is time, potentially I could run you through kind of a few slides about me. I mean, it's really good. And again, there were times where I didn't have time to do the pre-read. There were times that we didn't have time in the interview. But to me, the effort, to me, the thoughtfulness, to me, again, back to our kind of our analogy about comparing it to a sales pitch, spot on, right? And that was somebody who really wanted to win it. That was somebody who wanted me to remember them outside of that 45, 60-minute segment, and of, in many cases, kind of dozens of applicants and qualified candidates. So those are really things that I think can be great differentiators. The other one I think you and I talked about a couple weeks ago was the art and science of a fantastic follow-up. It's really kind of, you know, I got a great one the other day, actually. And I, if I had it in front of me conveniently, I'd actually read some of the sentences verbatim. But I think like calling out very specific things about our conversation, you know, one candidate, she responded to me, she said, Mike, you know, we ran out of time when you asked about how I do client discovery. So I wanted to share a couple bullets about what's made me really successful in doing that. And like, so crisp and so kind of attuned to the flow of that conversation. You know, I read that thank you note, immediately forwarded it to my recruiter and said, wow, this is somebody that we have to keep on our radar. Exceptionally great follow-up. Another one, I got into a really interesting discussion about the economy and the recession and how that was impacting ad budgets and ad spend. And, I mean, he shared some very specific examples about how that was playing out, but how perhaps he was fighting through those challenges. And he said in his thank you note, I want to let you know how much I enjoyed our conversation, specifically our talk track around the economy and what we can do, what any successful sales pro can do, fight through some of those factors. Really, really kind of moved and riveted by that thank you note. So again, these are just a couple of examples, but I think it's calling upon something very specific that occurred during the interview that to me makes a really good follow-up note.
Yeah, it sounds like, and it sounds like that's what you do with your clients as well, right? As you're meeting them, you know, you're clearly traveling to another country, and
that's why it's analogous.
David, yeah,
So you think about a great thank you note to a decision maker, right? Which is kind of like, I was struck by some of the organizational uncertainty that you're dealing with right now. If there's anything I can do to help, please let us know. Or it sounds like you're currently really focused on price as part of this decision. Know that we have some flexibility there, but also know that, you know, the long-term value we believe in our product or our platform pays for itself, you know, multiple times. There's all sorts of ways you can wordsmith this stuff, but I think something specific in a thank you note, in that case, to a prospect, right, or to a client, is perfectly applicable and almost kind of symmetric to what you would want to kind of convey as an applicant or a candidate.
Yeah, and it sounds like it shows that they're actually actively listening too, right? They're not trying to think of, oh, what's the perfect word I need to say, but it's more like just being with the other person. And you know, I think nowadays, right, because of technology and a lot of it, there's still a lot of online selling, right? You even have tools like Gong where you can like literally go back and rewatch it. So it's almost, you can't almost like don't have any excuse to not be able to mention specific things, right? Because you do have technologies that will kind of, you can go back and review, okay, what was the three pains that they mentioned during the call as well. Yeah. That's amazing, Mike. Yeah, a lot of good takeaways. I love what you said about the pre-reads. You know, I know that some of the most successful reps are exceptional about the pre-reads. And it's also, you show that you're not wasting their time, right? These executives are extremely busy. They have so many things going on. So it's like, okay, this 45 minutes or half an hour, an hour is going to be worth my time. Like, I know what to expect. I'm not coming into it saying like, oh man, like, you know, where are we in the process, just to get everyone up to speed. And then I like what you said about the follow-ups, right? I think so many of us, like, we prepare so much for the interviews and then we don't write. I mean, I'm sure you've had people who don't even write follow-ups after a meeting with you for 30 minutes or 45 or an hour. It's like, dude, like, you just spent 3 hours preparing for this interview. The least you could do is write like a 15-minute follow-up, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too, because I think at LinkedIn, I could be wrong now, but the policy at LinkedIn for a while was that recruiters would not give out actual emails for the panelists, and which I respect that. But you know, let's face it, there are ways to get around that. There's obviously in mail. You can even write one to the recruiter and you say, please, if you could forward this to Davidson or to Mike or whatnot. And so I think let's say you got to be scrappy. I mean, in most instances, they're not going to make this easy, right? I mean, most sales processes are not easy. So are these? And so I think, to me, these can often be the edge in securing the role or, perhaps more often staying on the radar of the decision maker. I mean, even the examples I just gave you of those really thoughtful, very specific follow-up notes, thank you notes, those are people, again, that I specifically told my recruiting, my TA partners, hey, let's keep these people kind of warm. Let's check in with them because I think they do have what it takes to really be successful in my organization.
Yeah, it sounds like the attention to detail, like the specific, like being that specific, you know, like, okay, like this either touched something in me, or this was an engaging, the person did the intellectual work, or that person understands the industry as a whole, right? Is able to add value. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I think it becomes kind of a leading indicator into how they're going to do the job, right? You know, one of my mentors and closest friends, somebody I worked with within marketing solutions for many years, and you know, one of her mantras is you know, to be terrific, you have to be specific. And it's one of those very, very simple mantras that I'll never forget the first time she said that to me, and it just immediately resonated. Like, you're so right, and it's universal, right? But specifically, yeah, in this case, around getting something you want, a deal, a job, a promotion. You know, understanding at a kind of a many, many levels deeper than the abstract point, what you need to get that thing is critical. And so specificity is really important. And it's funny, just even before we got together today, somebody sent me their kind of pipeline report, and it was just so lacking in specifics. It was kind of like, I'm 87%, 13% gap. That means this much. And it was like, tell me about that 13%. Tell me what the specific things you're doing this week, next week, following week, to close that gap. What money is pushing to the next quarter? What money is still saveable? And so, again, a very, very basic example, but how that report on its surface told me very little. Like, I could have opened Salesforce and seen that. So it added no incremental value to what I already could see. It was drilling into each bullet. I've kind of called it a 4-bullet email summary that really kind of told the tale of the situation and what we're trying to do to get out of it.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? I know that Gia, one of the leaders that she led the LinkedIn marketing solutions. Like, every time I listen to her speak, I'm like, oh man, like, she's such a thoughtful leader. You know, like I learned a lot from just hearing her speak to when we were a part of the LinkedIn Asian Alliance together, you know. What would you say is like something that you learned from her leadership, you know, having worked under her?
You know, we don't have all day, my friend. I could go on and on.
That's awesome.
We're fortunate enough to have the great Gia Hyun listening to this pod. She knows the she had on me and other leaders that were fortunate enough to work for her. But I think, you know, it's rare in business to find somebody who can advise you both tactically and strategically. And tactically, it's kind of, here are the things that you need to be doing now. And then, by the way, here are the things you need to be doing kind of when you zoom out a little bit to be successful in the future. And most people operate kind of in one of those areas, but not both. And she was a rare individual who was able to do both. I think she also was somebody who who could be very, very tough and demanding, but also incredibly compassionate, empathetic, and human. And I refer to this as kind of a false dichotomy that you have to be one or the other, right? You have to be really tough, and if you're that way, you can't be also kind and gentle. It's a complete myth. And in fact, I would argue that you can create exceptionally great relationships by leading by human first and being compassionate and empathetic and kind, and you'll get great work and output because of that. And then the coaching conversations become easier, right? Then they become, it's almost kind of like you're the person, and I know I felt this way in times when I worked for Gia, like, wow, I'm really letting that person down. I really care for this person.
Oh, wow.
And what I'm bringing is not 100%, or what I'm bringing is not, you know, senior director or quality or whatever. So I think that you get to that point, you build relationships, reporting relationships, leadership relationships like that. Then it becomes very organic, you know. And so I always felt like with Gia, her expectations were high, but were very clear. And also very kind of obtainable, so to speak. Like, she didn't set them so high that you kind of been like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to do that. And we're always kind of like, can do that. It'll take some hard work. It'll take growth mindset. It'll take, you know, perhaps even some training, but like, you know, I'll get there and I'll be better for it. And so I think about her leadership a lot. I think about others that I've been really, really lucky to work for. And I aspire to do that as well.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, that's a good point, right? There are leaders who, you know, have high standards, it sounds like, but also have the compassion and understands you at that visceral level and kind of pushes you to so that they're challenging you to grow.
I'm glad you redirected us there, because that shouldn't just be your boss, right? That should be your peers. That should be, you know, people that you surround yourself with. That can even be people that report to you. And I think in one of the great traits of leaders that I've been lucky to be around have been, it's almost like they'll take feedback from anybody, right? They'll take feedback from somebody who's part of their day-to-day process or part of their kind of quarterly process. They'll be open to, doesn't mean they have to agree with all of it. Doesn't mean that they have to implement all of it. But it means that they're open to that conversation. And so I go back to LMS days and, you know, I think about Diana Liu. I think about Mike Weir. I think about Juliana Jowdy. I think about Anthony Rizzicato. I'm naming people that that were great influences on me. And I think one of the things, all very different people, all tremendous leaders in their own right, but I think unafraid to say, hey, you know what? I think there's another level for you to go, right? I think there you can be better. That was good. You can be great, right? Mm. And you know what? You can even be exceptional, right? And here's what I learned how to get there. And I think, and these were all people, you know, for the most part, you know, that were kind of my peers, right? The same level, without reporting relationships, more just kind of like make better. And I think you think about this, kind of tying it back to your first question about leaving LinkedIn. This is why it's hard to leave a place like that, right? Because if you can create an organizational culture where people care about you, they want what's best for you, but they can also push you in ways that are critically important for the business and your development. That's like kind of utopia, right? From a business standpoint, right? And so one of the questions when people ask me, whether it's open or in confidence, say, should I leave this company? You know, whether it's LinkedIn, whether it's Google, whether it's Salesforce, one of these companies, I kind of say, well, think about what makes it great there. And then can you either have assurances that you'll have that where you're going, or can you recreate that? That's really kind of the question. If you think it's important, then it's like, do they have it there or can you create it there? And that's really the important question to ask yourself. And I think, and I've been, by the way, this is not me preaching, because I think I've been in situations where I've made moves and I've been kind of like, oh, I should have thought about that. And so what I tell people is think about everything, think about every single thing. And I think we talked the other day about this kind of decision grid, right? Of kind of like, here are all the things that are important to me. And there's some kind of stack ranking around that. And for me, one of those things was certainly surrounding myself with people who would push me. And I have that now. It's beautiful. Like all those people that I mentioned, I had an LMS, I have that now, a digital turbine. I have people above, people to my left and right who will push me, who will make me better, who will take the time to give me candid feedback, who will, you know, kind of take my feedback, right? Not personally, always professionally. And that's really important, and not important to everybody. And so I'm not here to say that should be important to everybody. I'm saying, but if it is important to you, try to get some level of clarity and assurance that you'll have that where you're going.
That's smart. And I think that's a good point, right? I think, you know, like after leaving LinkedIn, you do realize how special it is, right? It's you do realize that there's, I mean, it's hard to replicate that, right? Like LinkedIn has been around for a while, and you know, it's very thoughtful, right, in terms of the support structures and even just little things like conscious business courses and so much of the ERG stuff. And you know, I find myself seeking those things at other organizations, and quite frankly, like it doesn't compare, you know, but it is nice to be able to take some of those lessons and build that in other ways. So yeah, I love what you said about And I love what you said about candid feedback as well. It sounds like as a leader, obviously at your level, you have to almost like embrace feedback, right? Because you're going to be getting so much of it, not only from the client side, but internally as well, right?
I think, yeah. And I think that's a lot to unpack what you just said, but I'll kind of start in reverse order. The feedback point. Yeah, I think we've always been pretty good at receiving feedback. I think most people would say that, yeah, Mike's great at receiving it, but I think I've had to get better at giving it. I would argue that I'm still on that journey giving it, right? And I think it often stems from the importance of strict kind of compartmentalization, you know, which is kind of like, you know, just because I like you, just because I care for you, just because I understand perhaps what you're going through right now, doesn't mean that I'm going to sugarcoat this feedback at all. So I'm telling you, and I've been around, I mentioned several leaders at LMS, I think, that had that great gift of being able to strictly compartmentalize. And I'm more of a kind of a later project and kind of getting to that point. I will tell you, in the moments where I have been able to flex that way, it's been really liberating. It's been amazing. I will tell our listeners that if you think about this kind of thing about kind of fearless feedback, radical candor, you know, people can describe it in different ways. It does sound scary if you've never been a participant in it, either getting it or giving it. But man, it will you'll really be able to take flight if you get it. And I think the lesson that I would share that many others have shared is it actually is a form of compassion. It is a form of great caring. And, you know, I had a leader a few jobs ago who really, really pushed me. And I kind of thought he didn't like me. I kind of thought, hey, I'm not one of those guys. And he had like a cohort, and he had a group of rightfully so, some people that had followed him from company to company. And I kind of thought, oh, he doesn't like me. But I you know, the irony is now, you know, kind of years later, my relationship has never been met with him. And somebody I respect, he does too. I like very much. And now I kind of get that, you know, what he was able to do for me and for others was really a gift. Like he was able to kind of cut through the clutter and the sugar coating and the kind of like the awkwardness. He just kind of delivered it very, very straight. And I realized how valuable that was in hindsight. And, you know, I may never be able to deliver it like he did and he does, but I can aspire to that. It's powerful.
Well, I think because you're such a people person, in some ways you probably can be more honest and candid because they know it's coming from your heart. It's coming from a good place. But yes, it sounds like because you're so personable and like you're a player coach, right? A lot of times I think it's like harder for people like us that tend to be more people. Whereas like there's some certain people that have a persona that's more like direct and more to the point and you know, less fluffy. But like it was interesting because when you reached out to me to give me feedback at first, I'm like, oh man, like is he gonna rip me a new one? Like what, like, you know, at first I was kind of like curious, like I wonder why Mike wants to like, you know, talk to me. But then, you know, obviously after speaking with you, I'm like, oh wow, like that was such a valuable conversation because you had, you know, I can like you're able to accelerate some of the lessons so I don't have to. So instead of me making mistakes like the next 5 years, right, I can implement what you say and I won't have to learn the hard way.
I appreciate you saying that. And I'm glad that it landed well. And I'm glad that, you know, it was valuable. And sometimes the way I like to think about these situations is play it back differently. If I had reached out and said, hey, you can't go wrong, or hey, doesn't matter how you're thinking about this, it'll all work out. That probably wouldn't have been very helpful. And what I've often found in big decisions, which you know, in our world are very often professional ones, you know, you need both. You need people in your life, whether they be you know, spouses or best friends or you know, people that are going to say like, doesn't matter what you do, it's all great. You know, I'm gonna love you. I'm gonna care for you no matter what. There's great beauty in that. I don't want to diminish it. But I think it needs to be complemented by people who are going to push you. You know, I've had exceptionally great, and I've been lucky to have advisors who've looked at decks, pre-reads that I've, you know, sent in for interviews or, you know, kind of, I've shared some thoughts and almost like scripts for how I'm going to present myself. And I've had people say, not nearly good enough. You're not going to get that job. Not going to get it. I know people that have gone that process. They're out prepping you. I being in a position to hire for big roles like that, what you're sending isn't good enough. And, you know, it's amazing because sometimes I think I've sent those almost expecting a pat on the back and expecting, and you don't get it. And it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. And I'm sharing this with all the listeners. It's groundbreaking when somebody is able to, again, compartmentalize and say, hey, let's park our friendship, our relationship, how we feel about each other over here. Mm. And let's talk specifically about what I know you want, which is that job, that promotion, you know, whatever it is. And I'm here to tell you, it's not good enough. Like, and it's so powerful. And in all those cases, Davidson, all those relationships are stronger because of that. Without exception, they're all better. And because this is kind of, to me, like a definition of trust. Like if somebody trusts the relationship enough to give you that kind of feedback, even when they know you're expecting fluff, it is really, really powerful. Huh. And then you know, I've had opportunities in several of those cases to kind of return the favor, reciprocate. It's amazing to know you have that trust. Huh. She gave me really tough feedback. I was better off for it. I'm going to give her tough feedback. She'll be better off for it. And it's so like, you know, you end up, again, this sounds like it's some kind of, you know, Hollywood movie or something, but that's not the point. The point is that it ends up being something that you thought you had. It reinforces what you had. And in many cases, it kind of is even more powerful than what you thought you had.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't thought about that, but you're right. Like some of the folks that I've had the most sort of like back and forth with, we end up having much better relationships, right? Because I'm like, oh, you're one of the few people who actually challenged me enough to, you know, because everyone, like I said, for the most part, more people are going to be more like, oh, pat on the back. But there's it's rare when people are actually willing to just be honest and be like, hey, like, can I be upfront with you? Like, this is you're capable of so much more, you know? And it's the folks that often challenge me that at first I'm like, oh man, like, but then after, you know, once you, like you said, I love what you said about like compartmentalizing it. Once you kind of like put away the ego, it's like, actually like they have a point, you know? And that is hard for a lot of people, I think, to not take it personally, you know? Good stuff, Mike. Well, you know, we can chat for 2 hours, I'm sure. You know, you have so much valuable leadership insights, and I do have a couple more questions around, you know, being an Asian executive. You know, I know obviously in Silicon Valley and certain areas, certain bubbles, right? I would say yes, there's concentrations of more Asian executives, but in general, you know, what would you say about, because a lot of people who listen to this podcast or aspire to be like in your shoes one day, right? To be an SVP or senior director at like a LinkedIn or one of the top companies in the world, you know, but they struggle with, they say, hey, you know, I'm the only person that looks like me when I sit around in the boardroom, right? What advice would you give to folks that are struggling with some of those like confidence?
Yeah. I appreciate you asking that question. And the struggle is real, right? Those are real things. And far be it for me to diminish, how people may feel about, and to your point, certainly in kind of a commercial, like sales and marketing world, being an actual minority in many instances in those cases. And so I can't offer much prescriptive guidance in terms of how people should feel about those situations. I can maybe offer some prescription around like what they should do in those situations. And I think it comes down to really kind of what we talked about before, ironically, right? Which is kind of the preparation, the discovery, you know, asking a lot of questions. What is really important in these roles? You know, it's really interesting. When I first got into sales, which was quite a while ago, it was very much kind of a what I would call like a wine and dine operation, right? Where it was really, you know, people who had big expense accounts, people who had, you know, tons of kind of transactional relationships, and we're going to hit numbers, we're going to get promoted, we're going to get these positions of influence and power. And I think what we saw really with the emergence of Google, and the complexity of kind of ad tech, digital media, SaaS, it became something like, wow, you know, you that's not enough anymore. Mm. Like, it's not enough just to be somebody who can rely on those kind of soft skills, if you will, to succeed. Mm. It became something where you really need to put a premium on things like strategy and planning and operational rigor and all these things. So then that frankly was a kind of a shock to my system, and make all sorts of kind of changes in my learning journey professionally. But I think, and so I think it comes back to that kind of like, hey, when you have when you're lucky enough to have a mentor who's helping you get to that level, it's like, ask a lot of questions. Like, what are the most successful things in getting roles like this? Once you're in, what are the most successful traits of a great leader, you know? And then you take that back, you take stock of all those things, and then you map those back to perhaps some of the very specific things that, you know, people of color or people of a kind of whether it's gender, whether it's ethnicity, whether it's race, some minority population feels. You know, one of the great learnings I got from our work on the AAPI community, the ERG within LinkedIn, was hearing these incredible stories of people who came from cultures where modesty, humility are at an uber premium, right? And even, you know, talking about yourself in a way, let's be honest, you need to do in most of these interview situations.
Yeah.
Why you're going to do the job better than any number of candidates, why you deserve the promotion. We're very uncomfortable for people. I remember some of the coaching sessions that I did with members of our LinkedIn AAPI community, where they were like, Mike, what you're describing could not be harder for me based on where I come from, how I was. And it was so striking to hear those things. And it really moved me because I, at least certainly from a business standpoint, you know, I was fortunate. I have a kind of an unbelievably confident father who pushed his kids to he wouldn't frame it this way, but it's almost kind of like a fake it till you make it, kind of strategy of kind of like, understand the rules of the game, understand how those people operate, do your best to blend into those tendencies, and go from there. And I lived and frankly kind of thrived by doing a little bit of that imposter kind of improv act. To my aforementioned point, then the business got harder, it got more complex in a good way. And I think different skills were emphasized in business leadership. So I think, again, no easy answers here other than, I think the reality is often different than the perception. And again, through those conversations I had with members of our community, we're saying like, I don't think I can be a sales manager because you got to do X, Y, and Z. I was like, how do you know you have to do X, Y, and Z? Like, you know, you still have to do X, but Y and Z are not elements of successful sales management anymore. Those are kind of a bygone era, and the premium is now more on these areas. And so if people are going, I could do that, or I could see myself shining in there. And I think of some of the great leaders, some of whom we've mentioned in this podcast, they're not all extroverts. They're not all kind of, life at the party, enjoy the microphone. There's some of the people are much more kind of introverted, much more kind of less is more. And trust me, those are some of the most powerful leaders I've ever been around commercially.
Right.
I have unbelievably valuable experiences and relationships and credibility and stature. And so I think often this is kind of, myth busting, right, when you really get down to it. And so, again, perhaps a different way to answer your original question, but you got to find your confidence, to get the thing you want, the deal, the promotion, the job, interview even, right, taking the steps back, a few steps back. But once you're in it, I think we all battle some form of imposter syndrome, whether it's culture-based or experience-based, and that's just something we all have to just kind of like work on. And the good news is, it gives us something all to work on, right?
Wow, Mike, this is amazing. We'll definitely have to have you back. There's so many more questions I would love to ask you. But thank you so much for these insights, for anyone, right? Whether anyone in business, anyone who's interviewing, anyone who is curious on how to be a top performer or is curious about pursuing a leadership role someday. This has been extremely valuable.
And the pleasure has been all mine, Davidson. And you know, kind of close with a couple of thoughts. Number one is that, you know, I had an old friend several jobs ago, and he referred to me as kind of a serial job hunter. He said, "You're always on the lookout. You're always looking to interview." And I'll be very kind of vulnerable with our audience for a minute. I've been through layoffs, extremely painful layoffs. In that particular example, a company that I loved as much as the most diehard Facebook, Twitter, Google, LinkedIn employee, just wow. at that level. And so I've been through the period of like, oh my God, I thought I was going to be here for a good part of my life. And it turns out I wasn't. And so to bounce back, you know, flex some new muscles, to kind of, you know, kind of show up a certain way is really, really important. And so, you know, just want to kind of offer out to listeners, I'm available as a resource. You know, in most cases, my network is theirs. I'm available for coaching sessions. I'm not a certified professional coach, but, you know, having been somebody who's been on the interview circuit, does a lot of interviews, happy to help any way I can, regardless of kind of community background, whatnot. That's kind of what I can do. And I think we're all kind of searching for what can we do for people now in this really, really kind of difficult time. And that's maybe one thing. So hopefully listeners will take that to heart, and they can get in touch with me through you or directly. And, you know, and we can all get a little better.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. I want to acknowledge you for your leadership, for being someone who's always giving to the community, being authentic, vulnerable, you're always adding value everywhere you go. And, you know, you lead with your heart, and you also have the strategy and the tactical expertise to add value there as well. So just clearly demonstrated excellency and all that you do. I'm just so grateful to have you as a mentor, and I can't wait to see what you're up to and what you continue to build at Digital Turbine and beyond. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Davidson. Happy holidays. I think we're right at that week we can start saying that. I'm certainly happy Thanksgiving to you and to all our listeners, and excited to kind of bounce back here anytime you want, anytime you think it's valuable. And my thoughts are with everybody going through something right now, professionally or personally. And, let's kind of use this community in the best way possible.
Amen. Thank you.